Welcome to this episode of the Building Texas Show. I'm excited to be sitting with State Representative Donna Howard from House District 48, and we're going to be talking about everything that happens as a state representative in Texas. We're in an interesting season in Texas as the primary elections are happening right now, and that gets a lot of Texans out, or at least a lot of Texans confused by all of the signage around the roads. So we want to get some clarity from a sitting state rep. And Representative Donna Howard, thank you for joining us today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Now, you've been in this role publicly for a long time. I think you came into office in 2006, and you're continuing to serve your district. What have you learned in 20 years as a state representative?
I hope I've learned a lot. I was very privileged and honored to be elected, and it has been a privilege to serve ever since. I will say that, as a former board member of Common Cause Texas and somebody who's very interested in good government, the issue of term limits does come up periodically. And I see the value of that, especially at the executive level. But I also see the value of, and I wish I could figure out how to do it, a hybrid system that does allow for institutional knowledge to be a part of the process as you're bringing in new ideas and new thinkers. But here in Travis County, there are six of us that are wholly within Travis County, and three of my colleagues are running for other offices. And that means that we will be getting, for sure, at least three new people coming into our delegation. So for me personally, it felt like this is not the time to step aside, but to continue to use my knowledge that I have gained over the 20 years that I've been here.
Well, I appreciate that sentiment because I do see a lot of movement in our state level politics with a lot of the congressional seats coming up. I think there's right. 10 of them that are going to see change. And then you see roles like the attorney general that's probably going to see a change and others. But you're mentioning an important part. Those terms aren't very long relative to the work and the speed of the work that you do. So it can be lost in transition quite often. And it can just be lost in the tone of the person coming into that office, right? So yeah. How do you build sustainable policy that translates from person to person with ease? That's a hard question, but.
Well, no, and it is a challenge. There's no question about that. We are a part-time legislature. Yeah. So we are only meeting without special sessions. We are only meeting for 140 days every other year yeah. as the eighth largest economy in the world, which means that, and I understand why it got set up that way back in the 1800s. The idea was we wanted to have a citizen legislature that went back to their communities and lived under the laws that they had created, but also because of the travel distance at that time, and we didn't have Southwest Airlines. there were reasons that it got set up that way. I would suggest that we should look at having a more full-time body, but I understand there's a lot of downsides to that as well. I mean, the running joke is that instead of meeting for 140 days every 2 years, we should meet for 2 days every 140 years. But, you know, that's just what some people say. But to try to get more serious about answering your question, I have been really privileged to be on appropriations for almost the entire time I've been here. And even with and I'm the most senior member of appropriations, there's 27 members on that committee. And even with the amount of time that I've been on it, I still have to relearn things every session. There's so much to look at, pay attention to. In the interim, we're trying to figure out, okay, how are the laws that we passed actually coming to fruition? What is the impact? Are there things that we didn't anticipate? Should we be tweaking this the next time we come back? Lots to be looked at here. And it is hard to maintain when you have a lot of change in who is involved in the policymaking. Again, though, there's a lot to be said for not being stagnant, for not accepting the status quo just because. for having fresh ideas, having new ways of looking at things. That is very valuable as well. So, you know, I see that we need both, really. And I think that a lot of what we do here is our relationship building and making sure that we do have people that we work with who have a variety of levels of experience and expertise. We know who to go to if we have issues and questions about things, because clearly we push a button and vote on everything, regardless of whether we have vast knowledge of that issue or not. We must rely on one another. And so part of it is to find those relationships, to build those relationships, and to hopefully maintain those over the years and to develop new ones as new people come in.
One of the things that I think about as we walk through that answer is, what does a state representative do? Because you do represent your district, yeah. But your district is also represented by county officials, city officials, many other elected offices. And so a distinction that I like to draw for the audience is, when would they come and talk to a state representative about an issue versus when would they go to a different
right.
elected official with their concern?
Yes, and sometimes that's not clear. And we have a lot of, we actually, and I'm sure most state reps do this, we have a lot of working relationships with our local elected officials so that we can converse with them about things that come up and figure out who the best person is to refer constituents to. But when someone would probably come to a state representative's office is when they have issues with state agencies. They have issues with the Department of Motor Vehicles. They have issues with Workforce Commission, insurance, those kinds of things. I mean, the things that I think clearly state agencies are set up to regulate and to take care of. And so when people have questions, issues, concerns that arise in those arenas, they oftentimes will come to us. And I will say during COVID, I know that my staff worked nonstop trying to help people with getting their unemployment. I believe the number I remember is that my staff member who specifically worked with Texas Workforce Commission worked with 500 people, not necessarily our constituents. You know, these are people from across the state. She was helping the Workforce Commission because of the huge volume that was occurring. So there are legitimate things to come to the state for sure. It's not always black and white as to what those are, but that's what my wonderful staff, that's what our staff is so valuable. And that's what they help us figure out is where's the best person to direct or the best agency to direct this constituent to. But certainly when it's related to a state business, we will follow up for them and try to address their concern.
I appreciate your call to the staff and the work that they do, because we often say, oh, state representative, this is what they're doing. But then you have a staff around you to make sure that you can move through that volume of citizen requests and work and still do your job as well. So absolutely. What does that office look like for a state representative? Who do you have in there? And those are great opportunities for people early in their career, late in their career,
oh, yeah.
all stages. It's a wonderful privilege to do that work.
We use interns as well, which is a really great opportunity for young people who are finding their way through their academic journey to get a taste of what it's like to be a part of policymaking. Our offices we're all autonomous. We can set them up however we choose, but you know, standard, typical for sure, almost every office would have is a chief of staff, a legislative director, and a constituent services person. So those are kind of key core people that are in every office. But we also have a lot of us, including myself, have people that do a lot with communications, because a lot of our job is to make sure we're communicating with our constituents about what is happening here, about what they need to know about. And in my office, I am also the chair of the Women's Health Caucus. So we have a staff member who serves as the executive director of the Women's Health Caucus. And as I said, we've had multiple interns who work on special projects while they're here. So I think that's kind of just standard how things work. We do get office budget from the House of Representatives, but a lot of us use our campaign funds to supplement because we want to be able to get the best and the brightest and be able to at least get them a living wage while they're here. And so oftentimes, because the office budgets are very limited, we do supplement with our campaign accounts so that we can actually, I think, meet the goal of what those campaign contributions were for, and that is to make sure that I can be the best representative possible. And that means I have to have the best staff.
You mentioned the Women's Health Caucus. Can you tell me more about that? And we have a shared interest there around women's health. And then for me, in my background, it's the investment in women's health and the innovation in women's health that I see happening in Texas, but not getting nearly enough visibility.
Yeah. Yeah. The Women's Health Caucus started, I can't remember now exact year, but it was a couple of sessions before I took over as chair. And we focus on all things that have to do with women's access to healthcare. And because of the recent sessions, not just recent, really, for over a decade, sessions have been focused on abortion. We have done a lot in that arena, but we're much broader than that. We do a lot with the maternal mortality and morbidity issue. We do a lot with teenage teen pregnancy rates, those kinds of things. But also looking at how do we make sure that women get the kind of healthcare services that they need. And to your point, there's been a real lack of research that involves women. A lot of the pharmaceutical research and other research has been done on men. And there are obviously some differences biologically between the two. We need to have more women, and that has been occurring. We have more women who are stepping into becoming entrepreneurs and developing startups and the kinds of things that are going to address women's needs. And so it's an exciting time for women to have this surgence occurring where we've not had that kind of focus in the past.
Now, that also aligns, I think, with your professional background before coming into the office. What encouraged you to run for state representative back in 2006? How did we get here?
Well, unlike a lot of people who actually have a strategic plan and goals for these kinds of things, mine was one of those things that just built upon my life experiences. I was at the University of Texas when I got my nursing degree. I started UT in the fall of 1969. So I was there in the 70s with all of the political turmoil of that time and all of the groups. That's actually when Common Cause started, and that's when I joined Common Cause. There was a lot of political activity. There was a lot of opportunity to be a part of the process. Fast forwarding to getting my master's in health education, I was always involved with my professional associations and got involved with their efforts at the legislative level to advocate. But really, I eventually was raising a family and stepped away from working full time. And eventually ran for school board after getting involved in my kids' schools. And it was when I went and served on the school board that I realized that I loved being a part of policymaking. I loved that collaborative process. And in my case, it's a nonpartisan body, but we know each other's affiliations. And I was the only Democrat. Everybody else was a Republican on this 7-member body. But we found out right away that we shared common values and common goals and that we absolutely worked together beautifully. And they became some of my best friends, my closest friends. And it was just a great opportunity to see how you could work together with people. I unfortunately lost my reelection. It was when we were debating whether to have one high school, two high schools in Westlake. And we had just come off of winning the state championship football. So yeah, it didn't happen. And those of us who were up for reelection were defeated. But that's how it works. Yeah. The community spoke. they didn't like what we did, and so we were ousted. I did subsequently run for the State Board of Education twice because of redistricting and lost both of those. And I wasn't planning to run for anything else. And like a lot of women from my generation who have had to be asked to do things because, oh my gosh, I couldn't say I would be qualified. But I was asked, would you consider running for the legislature? I said no initially because I didn't feel like I could do that, that I would be qualified. And I don't know, I interviewed the other people that were running and decided, actually, I do know some things here, and threw my hat in the ring. And a special election happened because the incumbent left to become a lobbyist. And special elections are always interesting. They don't come like you would think a general election does. They usually have a lot of interesting, idiosyncrasies to them. Yeah. And I did win, and I've been here since, as we've already said, and it's just been such a privilege. I love being involved with the process here. Certainly, there's some problems with this process, but being able to be a part of helping create policies that hopefully improve and make a difference in the lives of Texans, I mean, that is something that's such a gift.
Well, and to see the span of that you've seen, Texas has gone through a lot of transformation. Your district has gone through a lot of transformation, yes, in those 20 years. But I appreciate your background in service and being involved in the community. And it's an important call out that many people will say, I'm never going to be qualified to run for this or do that. But you are. Yeah. And the opportunity in this country and this state exists for most people, short of felons and other things. But most people are qualified to run.
Yeah.
And then it's really just your effort, your work, your peers, and getting out and doing good in that, yep, seat. And that's what's going to keep you in a seat for 20 years, I can assume.
Yeah. Thank you. I hope so.
Now, you talk about that, though, and we're in a primary season, and I mentioned it at the, yeah, beginning of the show, where there are signs everywhere, and it does get confusing on who's in what race and where we are, but you're running unopposed in the primaries. Will you have an opponent in the general election next year or this year?
There is a Republican who has filed, so I will have an opponent in the general election, but with the primaries going on right now, I haven't really jumped into that yet. Kind of let the primaries get behind us before then we'll start focusing on the general election. But yes, I do have an opponent.
Well, that's my question there, because I see so many primaries and I see so many people running for one race. I can think of 21 people running in the primaries. And that gets confusing too, to our voters.
Yes.
And so I always want to encourage, and that's where I started the Vote Like a Texan brand for those kind of conversations, to really say, get to know who's representing you. And there's some great resources on your site and all representative sites around who is it that represents you at the state level. And that's why I double click on why and how are they representing you? Because I want to encourage people to engage in the primaries, understand why we're going to have runoffs. And then finally, we get to November. And that can be an exhaustive process for a voter.
Yeah.
And it is an exhausting process for a candidate and the teams. So I really want to bring attention and energy to be involved, understand why, yeah, and then make your decision and make it fully heard. Meaning, if you have a primary race, vote in a primary, because if you don't, it'll fly right by and your voice was missed.
I appreciate what you're doing so much, because it is a huge problem to get people, number one, to pay attention, because there's a lot going on in a lot of people's lives and, they just don't have the bandwidth to be looking at this too much.
Right.
But also with primaries, because you're voting in one party, there are a lot of people who do not identify with either party and they don't see that they have a role to play here and kind of give it away,
right,
to the more... the base of each of the parties, those that turn out because they are a part of the party, as opposed to a general population who can still help make a decision about who's going to be on the ticket in November. But I actually had a neighbor, I use his example a lot of times because he's somebody, you know, I was next door to for years and years and years. And, you know, we talked about politics, but he never voted in the primary because he said he didn't feel like he had a role to play in that. And he waited till November. Well, that's in a one, what we consider a one party state like Texas has generally been for a while now. Who is determined to be the candidate in the primary is oftentimes the de facto winner in November without anybody else voting. So whether that's the case or not, the fact is that there's opportunities to say who's going to be on the ballot, whether you end up voting in the Republican or the Democratic primary. And, you know, you have to pick there. That is the case. But that's really important that people vote in the primary. And then in terms of knowing about the candidates, you know, oftentimes you might have different interest groups, advocacy groups that you have an alignment with. They will endorse. Maybe you agree with a certain newspaper and they will often endorse. One of the groups that I normally like to refer people to is the League of Women Voters, because they put out a candidate guide that does not have any of their commentary on it. It's answers from the candidates that they report. So you can actually look yourself and see how the candidates have responded to different issues. And I think that's a really valuable thing. It's usually in your public library. And so that's a great way. But yeah, it's very hard to get through all the noise. And now that we have all the social media, it's very hard to know what's really going on here and to get through the rhetoric. So I appreciate your making an effort here to try to get people to become educated, because it really is important to take advantage of this wonderful privilege we've been given to vote.
And that's in any race at all levels, whether it's a partied election or not.
Right.
School boards, cities, counties are all critical. As we go back into your district and think about 2026, what are you looking ahead for, and what do you want your constituents to know you're up to in 2026?
Well, I am going to continue to work and focus on the budget, because that's where a lot of my expertise now is. And because there's so many things that we do that are dependent, obviously, on funding. In fact, we don't always get certain legislation passed for things that we want to do, but we can still get some money through the budget to implement some things. So a lot of monitoring things over the interim is what I'm doing right now to see what do we need to be tweaking as we move toward next session. My district is has a lot of concern about wildfire mitigation, for one thing, and we're going to be doing some more focusing on that. Obviously, public education continues to be a huge issue for a lot of folks. And now that we've had the voucher bill passed, we want to make sure we're seeing how that is going to come to fruition and what that's going to mean for our budget. You know, I keep going back to the budget because that's what I focus on. But the fact is that despite the large amount of money that we've put into public education, we still are funding a per pupil amount below what we were prior to COVID. So we haven't kept up with inflation and with the needs. We have a larger special education population. Yep. So concerns in my community about public education, but also about access to healthcare. And that's always, again, something that I'm always going to be going back to, is how do we make sure that people get the access to the care that they need? And now that we have all this uncertainty with the subsidies for the affordable care options that people had before, there may be more who are uninsured. We're in constant contact with our local health officials about what they're seeing. And there certainly are a lot of concerns out there. You know, it really, my district is concerned about just about everything. I mean, we're here at the seat of Texas government. The legislature and what we do in state government is the front page of our news every day. We're not like another part of the state where that's not the case. So it's very much a part of our community, which in my case, I am so appreciative of. My constituents know what's going on. They participate. They don't want any BS from me, because they know what's going on. And I like that. I want to be talking with this educated populace that we have. And I do hear from them frequently. And I try to be in the community as much as I can so that I can hear from them. But they're really, I think the focus is on a lot. It's across the board.
My final question, I should have asked it earlier, but you mentioned appropriations and just now you talked about your focus on the budget. And imagine those two are related. If somebody says, well, what is appropriations? Help us understand what that committee does and why it's so critical to the work that you're doing every day.
Thank you for the question. Yeah. On appropriations, we put together a 2-year budget for the state. And you can imagine, because we are a part-time body every other year, that means that we're looking basically 2.5 years to the future, not knowing what the economy is going to be like and trying to make our best guesses based on the information we get from the controller's office, from the legislative budget board, those kinds of things. But we come up with a budget that's going to be given to all of our state agencies, the state budget, which is what we're responsible for, but also recognizing where we're going to have matches from the federal government, where we've got constitutionally dedicated funds, what we're going to be doing with our rainy day fund and how we're going to be able to use that. We really look at every source of revenue that the state has and hear from all of the state agencies about what their needs are. We have hearings where we hear from not only the agencies, but also from the public about what their experiences might be, what they think we should be focused on. But pulling all of that together over a several month period, and then actually, you know, in our case, as the House, working with the Senate to compromise on things because they're going to have a little bit of a different viewpoint about where the priorities should be. But, you know, it's a long process. It's already started, really, because the agencies have already been submitting their legislative requests. But yeah, so it's really about coming up with this multi-billion-dollar budget for 2 years to provide the services that we think Texans expect us to provide.
It's a critical role at the state level. It really is how the money gets distributed in that time period. And it is a lot of research that goes into how do we make this right appropriation over the next 2.5 years. So thank you for the explanation.
Sure.
It's a critical role that I think is lost in the headlines of state politics. There is a lot of work in the subtext that is happening. And again, it's the staff, it's the representatives, it's a lot of people prioritizing Texans and making sure that we can create the state, grow with the state, and continue to have a great quality of life across Texas.
That's the goal.
Representative Donna Howard, it's been a pleasure to get to know you today, to hear your story, and thank you for your years of service. And I look forward to seeing how this year plays out for you and in your district.
Thanks so much for having me.
Please like and subscribe and join us as we are building Texas. Thank you to our sponsor, Chisos Boots, and their damn comfortable cowboy boots.